Mr. Tyhurst, Trio 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in London.
Which part of London?
Canning Town, 316.
What did your father do for a living?
My father, he was a labourer in the steelworks of Samuel Cutler's on the wall.
Did you go to school in Canning Town?
In, well, it was West Ham, Gainsborough Road School in West Ham.
How old were you when you left school?
14.
So that must have been 1937.
Yes, about that, yes, 36, 37.
Did you get a job when you left school?
Yes, I went to work at Keely and Tom's in Stepney. That's a grocery warehouse that did the international stores, etc. And Keely and Tom's had their own shops as well.
What were you doing when war was declared?
When war was declared, I was working for a jewellery shop in Commercial Road, Stepney. I changed jobs and I went to this other place.
How did you feel when you heard the news that Chamberlain had declared war?
Well, it's hard to explain. It was frightening, worrying, thinking of what's going to happen after. There's so many different things you'd heard, reference to gas and all this sort of thing. Would it come to us?
Were you in any of the early bombing of Britain by the German Air Force?
Yes, I was. I joined the Home Guard when they announced that they wanted people for the Home Guard. And Father and I went up to Balham Street and we joined up in the police station. And then I used to have to do the guards in under the arches on Canning Town Bridge. At Silvertown, readout at Silvertown, and all during the early bombing, we were under there. And then the house I was living in Marbury Road, but prior to that, my mother came down to Bentley, and Father and I were up there on our own, and our house was bombed, and we lived under the Wesleyan Church in... Well, it's near Balham Street, actually, in West Ham. And we lived there for 2 weeks down in the crypt, going off to work each morning, coming back in there. And then eventually, Father said, well, let's go down to Mum. And we came down to Bentley.
In Hampshire.
In Hampshire.
Which unit of the Home Guard was this? Was it called the Canning Town unit of the Home Guard?
I don't remember the name. I think it was to do with Essex. I think they called it like an Essex branch. That's all I can't remember actually. It was LDV actually then. It was Local Defence Volunteers. As before, they called it the Home Guard.
Did you have a uniform?
No. All I had was an armband.
What did the armband look like?
Well, it had just a khaki armband with the black lettering LDV on it.
And what kind of training did you get with the LDV?
Very little, actually. All we did was more or less went on and patrolled wherever we had to be. We didn't do a great deal of training. And we did a little bit of square bashing, which I know now is square bashing, but I didn't in those days. It was just forming up in threes and turning right and left and all that sort of thing. Normal square bashing.
Did you learn to fire a weapon?
Not then. No, I didn't fire any weapons till I came down to Bentley and transferred into the Bentley Home Guard. And then I was kitted out with a uniform and so on. And we did training then, and we trained with the Canadians and the local army from Aldershot. And, well, until I went in the service, I did all that. That then, I was a full corporal when I left the LDV. I was one of two people that had a Thompson submachine gun, and that was under my bed in a box. I was issued with a Thompson submachine gun. Myself and a sergeant that lived down the road pair of us had a Thompson submachine gun. We used to fire it in local ranges and in also some of the quarries that we got around here. We used to go in the training firing them in there.
Do you think the Home Guard would have given a good account of itself if the Germans had invaded?
Well, I think they would. Mind you, a lot of them were older men. Understandably, I was a young man. And there was a lot of older men. And whether they would have been able to have, you know, stood the pace, knowing what war was afterwards, knowing what I knew after all that, whether they would have, you know, stood pace. I think they would have given a good account of themselves, but it's difficult to say considering the age of some of them. And they were a great bunch of chaps, and I think they would have tried, but whether they would have been any use against a trained army, I got me doubts.
Do you have any stories or anecdotes about the Home Guards you were in?
Not really that I can remember. I mean, at times it was taken as fun and games. It wasn't taken seriously at some times. Other times it was taken seriously, naturally. But it was, well, amusing. I can't quite explain. It was amusing, but also taken seriously at times.
How do you feel when you see this Dad's Army program now?
Well, it's in some parts of it, it is true to life. I think whoever, you know, devised that series, they must have had a good knowledge of the Home Guard, because in parts of that, it is typical of how it was.
Such as?
Well, amusing. Where you get, like, that Corporal Jones, for argument's sake. You know, this sir, that sir, and all that sort of thing, you know, and he'd do this and he'd do that. One or two of the farm labourers that were here were very much like that. And then you had, like, Captain Mannering. Such a great man. He's in charge. But we had a gentleman here. It was very much like that. He was in charge. And he used to let you know that he was in charge. So the program, I think, is very much true to life.
Can I ask you a bit about the Blitz, that as you experienced it in London? You say your home was bombed out?
Mm-hmm. The house we lived in Marlborough Road was bombed.
Do you remember what the address was?
Yes, it's number 10 Marlborough Road.
This is Canning Town.
At Canning Town. It's now part of the new road. It's been pulled down. It's a new road goes through there now.
Where were you when the house was hit?
I was under the arches of Canning Town Bridge. And there was the Howard's Timber Yard was the other side, and that was ablaze. Because that night it was very heavy bombing. They came down bombing the docks, and it was very, very heavy.
Was your house a total write-off?
Well, it was uninhabitable. And also, there was an unexploded bomb in the back garden. When I arrived home, the police were trying to get my father to come out and go to this church. But he wanted to wait till I came home, because I was on duty with the Home Guard. And he waited there for me to come home. And he wouldn't move, and there was quite a hullabaloo going on, because Dad wouldn't leave. The police wanted him to leave, and he wanted to wait till his son came home. So when we came home, then we had to go to this church, and that was a day off work, so I couldn't go to work that day.
Do you remember the date of that, or when it was approximately?
It's just a memory.
But your mother had been evacuated by...
Yes, because she was ill, and we got her away prior to that, down to Bentley here. My sister's husband, his parents used to do the hop picking down there. He organised the hop picking in Bentley. And they came down here naturally for the hot picking, and they stayed here. And they got my mother down here, my two sisters and my young brother. And they came down here to Bentley and left father and I in London. And as I say, when the house got bombed, we lived under this church in the crypt for two weeks.
What were conditions like in the crypt?
Well, all it was a bed.
A proper bed?
They were more, I can't explain that, see, it was more or less like a mattress on the floor. It was very uncomfortable. We just slept there, and we had a place there to wash. Everybody else was washing as well.
How did everybody get on with each other?
Well, we didn't take a lot of notice of each other, to be honest. It was one of those things where the circumstances were you just kept to your two selves. We used to go out and try and find something to eat and come back, and it was mainly somewhere to go in and sleep, like a dust house in the back. And that was it. We slept there, went off to work next morning, got whatever food we can. The trouble was with food then, was half of these restaurants and cafes and so on, they never had hot food at times because gas mains being broken and so on. Your best bet was to use these coffee stalls, as we called them in those days. They were like a caravan on wheels, wooden caravan on wheels. And they served tea, coffee and sandwiches. And that's how we lived. It was very sparse. We never had a proper meal, not till we came back down here. But a lot of it, I can't remember now. Not those things. Because then we came down here, and then we got billeted, and I was billeted with the rector. He was the gentleman that married the wife and myself.
What were these arches that you took shelter under?
Well, they were the arches under the bridge.
A railway bridge?
No, the Canning Town Road Bridge. There was two bridges in Canning Town. The old iron bridge, which was there first. And then they built a new road bridge. And it was under the arches of that bridge, which was the Home Guard readout. And that's where we used to stand guard, sort of thing, under these arches.
Did you ever use proper air raid shelters?
Used air raid shelters at home. We had an Anderson shelter in the garden, which where we lived was up and down. Family upstairs, family downstairs. We had a little back garden, and that was where we dug the hole, put the Anderson shelter in, and the earth that came out from the hole covered the Anderson shelter. Now, we used to sleep in there, all of us. If there was, when the raids came on, that was where we used to go in there and sleep. But some nights you take a chance and stay in your bed, but it was not the safe thing to do.
Were you frightened during the bombing?
Firstly, yes. But then you get so used to it, it's like most things, you accept it. The only time got frightening was when we had a load of incendiaries dropped. And then it was frightening to start with, but then we got out putting out these incendiaries and putting sand on them and so forth. And I mean, you take no notice of it. I was, 15, 16. It's frightening, as I say, to start with, but it's like everything. You get so used to it, you take no notice of it.
How do you think public morale stood up during the Blitz in Canning Town?
Well, from what I saw, very good. Nobody seemed to be extremely upset. The only time was like when a place got bombed and occupants were killed, the relatives were upset, understandably. But apart from that, life went on more or less as usual. You had the bombing at night, next morning everybody was going off to work if they could.
Was there any hatred of the pilots who were carrying out the bombing?
I can't say for that. I mean, it was just one of those things you used to look up and swear at them and just carry on. I mean, there was, I suppose, but not outwardly shown. You felt it, and you used to, you know, think, oh, these guys, you know, coming over again. But that was about all.
Do you remember any other buildings or streets in your area that were hit by bombs?
Oh, there was quite a lot. I mean, there was quite a lot after I left. There was more. But at that time, there was several parts in the street that were bombed and all round. But to remember anything specific, no, I can't. There's so much damage.
How did you come to be in the army yourself?
Well, I wanted to join the army actually when I was left school, because my father, being a regular soldier, hear all the tales about the army, and I wanted to join, but they wouldn't allow me. And then I came down to Bentley, and I went to work locally in Farnham. And then I got conscripted. I got called up in the age group. And that was 1942 when I actually got called up. But I signed, I was conscripted before that, naturally. I had medical and so on, all the shot. And then I actually went into the service in 1942 on firework night, 5th of November.
What was your basic training like?
To start off, the normal basic training wasn't too bad. You see, previously to going into the service, well, when I was a young lad, before I left school, I was in the 6 Essex Cadets. So I knew quite a bit of military training. So to a certain extent, I was prepared for it, but it was hard, and actually, as a young lad, my mother did everything for me, and of course, when I got into the service, I had to do it myself. Where mother used to lay me clothes out and wake me in the morning, well, that never happened when I got in the service. All those sort of things, I had to do my own sewing, my own darning. But like everything else, it doesn't take you long to find out how to do it.
How were you treated by those in charge?
Fairly well, but discipline was very, very strict, and I think it should, so it should be. I had one or two run-ins with the room corporal. One particular thing was that when I went into the service, I had my uniform from the Home Guard and had my respirator. And one day in the barrack room, the corporal in charge of the barrack room wanted some cotton wool. And anybody got any cotton wool? I said, yes, corporal. Where is it, son? In a respirator case. He said, no, that's cotton waste. I said, no, it's cotton wool. He said, it's cotton waste. I said, it's cotton wool. And he said, come here. Of course, naturally, I go in, stand to attention in front of the Queen's CO. He said, I'm going to your respirator case. He said, if it's cotton wool in there, I'll apologise. He said, if it's cotton waste, you're under charge. He went to the investigator case, and it was cotton wool. Because I knew it was cotton wool, because in the Home Guard, we was issued with cotton wool because they couldn't get cotton waste. And of course, he asked why, and I explained to him why, and he apologised. So that was one good thing with the army. They did occasionally apologise. And another incident was we was being lectured on the Thompson submachine gun. And like an idiot, when you're a young lad, you don't think. I contradicted the sergeant on one bit on the Thompson submachine gun. And of course, there again, I was on the coals. He said, right, what do you know about a Thompson submachine gun? I said, I used to have one. And he blew his top and he said, you what? I said, I used to have one. When did you get that? I said, I was in the Home Guard. I said, and I and a sergeant had a Thompson submachine gun. And he asked me certain questions. Oh, going back, what style it was, he took the pistol grip off and he said, oh, you don't touch it and so forth and so on. I said, well, it does come to bits. And of course, I should never have said that because you can take it to bits, but only if you know what you're doing. And he made me give the lecture on the Thompson submachine gun after that. And he apologised as well. Because, as I say, I used to have one and it was under my bed. And that's where it stayed in a box. I used to have it out like that when I was on duty. But the Army didn't know what a Thompson submachine gun was then in 1942. But I guess.
You were telling me earlier that you refused to take promotion in the army. Can you give me again the background to that?
Well, the background to that was that in the aptitude test, that when you go in first, you know, they're supposed to say what you're good for with all these tests. They place you in the right place. And I heard that I'd been nominated for PO, which was potential officer, through these tests. And I went up before our company commander, myself and another chap, and we were asked all manner of questions. And one was relating to finance. Did I have a bank account? Did my father have a bank account? What was his job? Well, he was only a labourer. And I was just a normal working kid. And I heard no more about it. And from then on, I swore that I'd never take promotion in the army. And I never did. I went all the way through. Several times I was put on carders and so forth, but I refused promotion the whole time. I stayed as I was, as a private soldier. The only time I nearly took promotion was prior to coming out. I was an infantryman all the time until the last few months of my service when all the battalions were abroad and I was at Catrick and I was in the sick bay. And the MO wanted me to stay in and they was going to make me up full sergeant to stay in. But my dear wife wouldn't allow it. She wanted me out. So I came out.
Did you like the army?
I did. I would love to have stayed in the army. I reckon it's one of the, well, to me, it was a great life. I enjoyed it, providing you kept your nose clean and did as you were told. There was no problems at all in the army. I think it was a great life. You and all your pals and so on, I mean, you make great friends. You learn, well, like myself, you meet people from all different walks of life, all over the country, all different views, and I think it's a great life if you can stand it. There's times when it does get you down, but I would love to have stayed in, come out when I'm about 40.
Can you tell me how you came to go abroad?
Well, I was, say, did my initial training Then I was sent to what they called the specialist company in the Royal Sussex Regiment in Colchester. And I went on to Bren Gun Carriers. I learned to drive a truck first, then I was on Bren Carriers. Then I did 12 weeks there and then went up to West Hartlepool to the 10th Battalion of the Royal Sussex. And that was a holding battalion, which naturally send you abroad. And I was up there for 3 or 4 months, and then I heard I was on a draft, but on detail, on a draft to go abroad. Where, you don't know. You just surmise. Then in the July, I think it was at 43, we went up to Greenock on board the SS Rangitata, which was New Zealand meat ship. And off, we landed then in South Africa. And we was in Durban, South Africa, for about 8 weeks. We thought we were going up to North Africa. Instead of that, we boarded the Stirling Castle and went to India. Then they wanted volunteers for this long-range penetration group, which it was first called, the Special Force Long-Range Penetration Group, Wingate. Well, they couldn't get enough volunteers, so they started a press men. You had to go for a medical, and if you passed A1+, plus, you was drafted off. And then I was drafted off from, Doolally or Dale Down I was then, and went up to Duckwin Dam and joined the King's Own Royal Regiment.
Which battalion of that?
It was the 2nd Battalion of the King's Own Royal Regiment. And then we started training for this long-range penetration group, which was later called the Jindits. And that's when training really started. It was really hard graft. You started off carrying a small pack, and that had to be on all day long. You were, first thing in the morning, you weren't allowed to speak above a whisper. You were only allowed to smoke at certain times of the day. You picked up any rubbish. You didn't put any rubbish down, throw it down. You were on a charge, but the charges were then they couldn't put you in confined to barracks or anything like that. So you had certain privileges, which was i.e. sugar and different things like that, taken away from you. Then your kit gradually increased, and you had to keep it on all day. Even sat down having meals, you had your kit on. It gradually increased in weight to one pack, then you had your big pack on the back, and carried ammunition in your pouches, till you ended up with, at that time then, was about £50 a kit.